Blog Talk Radio.
Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, November the 11th, and what a good day to chat with our friend Barry Jacobson, military historian. We'll be joining with Barry in just a second. Of course, this is the 100th anniversary, not just of Veterans Day, but it's the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I, which is the reason, or one of the reasons, that Veterans Day is celebrated on this amazing day of November 11th. So we'll get into that with Barry. We'll kind of revisit the history and how this day, November 11th, came to be. We're also going to talk a little bit about President Trump in Paris. I think he's on his way home now, but we'll talk a little bit about that particular trip. But what an amazing day, Veterans Day. And it's always a day, you know, it's interesting. I have many friends, of course, overseas, and they always get Memorial Day and Veterans Day confused for whatever reason. You know, they hear Memorial Day, they hear Veterans Day. They don't understand the difference. And, of course, Veterans Day is the day we remember everyone who has served in our armed forces, going back to the very beginning Revolutionary War. Memorial Day, of course, is when we remember the fallen at war. So it's two different days, but a lot of times people get them confused. And that's understandable. You know, we had several veterans today at our church get up and be saluted by the congregation. I think it's a wonderful thing. I mean, it's just absolutely great to see many of them were wearing their uniforms. It's just absolutely great to see these gentlemen from Korea, one from World War II we still have with us in our church, obviously many from the days of Vietnam, obviously many from recent wars, Iraq and Afghanistan, but it's just great. It's just great to say to them, thank you for your service. And one of these gentlemen dressed up today with his uniform, and it was so touching to see him wearing that uniform. Let me say hello to our friend Barry Jacobson. How are you, Barry?
Good evening. How are you, Silvio? It's been a long time.
It's been a while, but with Veterans Day around, I thought about you, and I thought about, calling on your wonderful knowledge of not just of Veterans Day, but of history in general to do a couple of things. Remember this day, why it happened, November 11th, and maybe what it means today, and President Trump in Paris, celebrating this day. So just a lot of things going on. But how have you been now that you've got two NFL teams to cheer for?
Well, it's bittersweet in that the Chargers, which were my team when I lived in San Diego for so many years, I loved them then, but I used to say I bled blue and gold, Charger blue and gold. But when they moved to L.A., I felt rather betrayed, as people mm-hmm. often do when their team leaves.
Sure.
And so even though I moved a year later to L.A. myself, I still hold it against them. So actually, I root for the Rams these days, which, by the way, was the first team I ever rooted for as a kid because I grew up in L.A.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
the Rams
nice
are doing
the Rams
well.
They just had their first defeat of the year. They were undefeated up until last week.
Mm-hmm.
But, they're the best. They're the best record in the NFL right now, about midway through the season, so can't really complain.
Now, explain something. They're both going to get new stadia. I mean, both teams are going to get a new stadium in L.A.?
That's my understanding, and it's going to be owned, I think, by the owner of the Rams, and the Chargers will merely rent it or rent the space. I'm not sure how they're going to work out who's the visitor and who's the home team when they're playing each other.
Right, right.
But, I'm sure they'll have something cooked up.
Now, of course, they're in different conferences, aren't they? So they may not even play each other that much.
Not every year they won't, but some years they will. I mean,
sure.
The way it always works is one conference, one division of each conference plays another division of another conference each year, as well as their own division. So, we'll see.
We'll see how it goes.
It's been great, and I'm delighted.
We'll see how it goes. But we have the same issue with the Oilers. I mean, not the Oilers, but the Houston Texans. They used to be the Oilers. Now they're the Titans. But, we play the Houston team maybe once every few years. The Giants play the Jets every once in a while, too. I actually think that, and I have felt this way about Major League Baseball as well, that I think they ought to put these teams, I mean, I think the Rams and the Chargers should play each other twice a year, just like division rivals. I think that would do wonders, not necessarily for attendance, but it would be a good rivalry, a local rivalry.
Yeah, well, other teams share a city, but I don't know any other teams that share a stadium, so that's going to be interesting to see. This might be a first in the NFL.
Yeah, right now, you're right. Well, yeah, so you're saying that the Chargers are never going to have their own stadium? Is that what you're saying?
Not in the foreseeable future. My understanding is they threw in with the owner of the Rams, and they've decided to lay out that stadium. I mean, who knows what the future holds? They may eventually get their own stadium. But as of now, there's no plans that I know of.
Well, we'll get into Veterans Day in just a second. I'll just make one more comment about the Chargers. They ought to go back to Anaheim Stadium. The Rams used to play there. Remember that?
I do. And I always felt it was weird, the Rams being in Anaheim. The problem with L.A. is L.A. has never supported an NFL team before very well. The Raiders, the Rams, they never got the kind of attendance the NFL wanted, which is why the Raiders went back to Oakland and the Rams went to St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious how they think they can support two teams, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how it works out. But at least the Rams are playing very well right now. We cannot say that about the Cowboys, but we'll leave that for another show. But today is Veterans Day, and when you hear Veterans Day, right before you came on, I was talking about how it always touches me, because at our church, many veterans, they stand up after the Mass. The priest will recognize all the veterans. They all stand up. In the Catholic tradition, they get a blessing, but you know how that works. They all stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And, everybody salutes them. All these kids applaud them. It's very touching how we do it in our church, and we do this every year. And I even took a picture of myself with one of the veterans from Korea. So I love this day. I mean, this is really one of my favorite days of the year, Barry.
Yeah, let me and thank you as a veteran for that. Let me take our audience back to the roots of this holiday. It is celebrated for a reason on November 11th every year. Some holidays are the first Thursday or last Tuesday or whatever of every month, a certain month every year. As example, Labor Day is always the first Monday in September, and Memorial Day is the third Monday in May or some such thing. Thanksgiving is the third Thursday of every November. Veterans Day is different. Veteran Day always falls, regardless of what day of the week it is, on the 11th of November, and for a reason. The reason is it used to be, before 1954, called Armistice Day. It commemorated the end of World War I, the Great War. That war raged for four bloody years, 1914 till 1918, a little more than 4 years, in fact. And finally, on November the 11th, the Allied and Central Powers met at a place called Compiègne in France on a train car and signed the armistice. It was signed on the 11th day of the 11th month on the 11th hour. In other words, 11 a.m. on 11th of November, 11 November 1918. The guns fell silent. And that horrible war came to an end. Now, we thought it was the war to end all wars. And Woodrow Wilson signed a proclamation naming that day every year to be commemorated as Armistice Day. Well, we know it wasn't the war to end all wars.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it wasn't even the greatest war. Many more were to fall, most notably in World War II. Mm-hmm. So in 1954, Congress amended that holiday and changed it from Armistice Day to Veterans Day, celebrating all veterans of all wars. Now,
right.
By the way, it's not
interesting.
It doesn't celebrate the fallen. The fallen are celebrated and commemorated on Memorial Day. Separated out. Some countries don't. They have Remembrance Day for both.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a special day just for veterans, and that's Armistice Day / Veterans Day, November 11.
Mm-hmm. That's right. In fact, before you came on, I was saying that one of the confusing things from people from other countries is exactly what you just said, that, they confuse Memorial Day and Veterans Day. And I, always explain that Memorial Day is for the ones, of course, who have died or been killed at war. And Veterans Day is for everybody else who has served. And so I just think it's a beautiful holiday. Now, today, I'm maybe it's a stupid question, Barry, but 11-11, did they plan to do it at the 11th hour, or was that just a coincidence?
No, that was planned. It was, the two sides have been negotiating for an armistice. And they said that we will sign this and the guns will fall silent. The fighting will stop at 11 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
On November, so 11-11-11 was deliberately planned. And it certainly is catchy.
Sure.
I bet you if you were a soldier fighting on the front, you probably would have wished it had ended on the 10th of November or the 8th or 9th,
mm-hmm.
Any day before,
sure.
As soon as it could have. But that's what they agreed upon.
Yeah. That some of the audience may remember that we did a whole bunch of shows back in 2013, 2014, 2015. We did several shows about World War One. And we have them in the archives. I have links to some of them. But I remember when we talked about World War One, Barry, that we did a show on the origins of the war. We don't have time to redo the whole series, but if you could explain, why the war happened, maybe what created the war, what set up the war, because as I recall from the shows that we did, that this was the war that was supposed to be over by Christmas. This was the war that was supposed to, be over very quickly, and it didn't turn out that way, Barry.
No, I mean, the old saying is man plans, God laughs. And that certainly was the case in August of 1914. The Great War, or World War One, was quite an unnecessary war, but the reasons it happened are these. The great powers of Europe between say the Franco-Prussian War of 1870 and 1914 had been arming themselves in preparation for another conflict. The French thought they'd have to they planned to fight another war against the Germans. Prussia had become Germany after 1870, uniting all the German principalities. And the Kaiser Wilhelm, who was the second of the emperors of Germany, had grand imperial designs, which not only antagonized the French. By the way, the French lost Alsace-Lorraine, their easternmost territories right along the Rhine River, to Germany after 1870, and they longed to get those back. So they were, they were planning their version of what was going to happen, which was to invade Alsace-Lorraine at the beginning of hostilities with a grand push and drive the Germans out. I'd say very limited objectives, but that was their objective. The Germans, on the other hand, they had a plan to crush France in a matter of weeks with what was called the Schlieffen Plan, a massive attack through neutral Belgium that would bypass the French armies pushing into Alsace-Lorraine, swinging north of them, and then swinging south and capturing Paris, which would be lightly defended because most of the French troops would be pushing into, again, Alsace-Lorraine. And the Germans would then swing behind the French lines and push east into the rear of the French armies and bag the French, so to speak, and capture their entire army pinned up against the Rhine. So that was the German plan. Now, how did it spread to all the other powers? Why wasn't it just another version of the Franco-Prussian War? Well, because between 1870 and 1914, all the great powers, these, which were Austro-Hungaria, that was an empire in the Balkans, centered in Vienna, included Hungary, Russia, Prussia / Germany, France, Italy, and England, these were the great powers of Europe, had all formed alliances with each other or mutual defense pacts. So these pacts were all set up so that if one power got attacked by another power, a third power was obligated to come to its defense. So as an example, Austria had a treaty with Germany, which said if Austria went to war, Germany had to follow suit. Russia had a defense pact with Serbia. So if Serbia went to war, which it eventually did against Austria at the very beginning of the war, which I'll get to in just a second, then Austria had, or then Russia had to come defend their fellow Slavs in the Balkans. England eventually signed a defense pact with Belgium to defend Belgium. Belgium, of course, was targeted by the Schlieffen Plan for German attack. It had a small army, but Germans thought they could bypass that fairly quickly, brush it aside. But then the British, who had a very good but small army, were going to land on the shore and defend Belgium. So what happened in 1914 was began with the assassination of the Archduke Ferdinand. He was the heir to the Austrian Empire. And a leftist anarchist named Princeps, killed him and his wife in the streets of Sarajevo while they were there visiting. And these anarchists they're basically the same people politically as Antifa today. They're far-left anarchists. And they've been very busy throughout Europe and the United States at the end of the 19th century and into the early 20th century. And what that did is it set off a chain of events. Austria demanded revenge, and when Serbia wouldn't pay an indemnity for what had happened to Archduke Ferdinand, then Austria attacked Serbia. Russia came to the rescue of Serbia. Germany had to declare war on Russia. But because they were planning on attacking France anyway, and France had a treaty with Russia, Germany decided to attack France first, knock France out of the war, and then go turn on Russia. And the Schlieffen Plan was launched. That brought the British into the war against the Germans to defend Belgium. And by the way, the Germans had threatened England by building a large navy, so the English felt threatened by the Kaiser as well, though not his army, but his fleet, England being the paramount naval power in the world. So all these things kind of like dominoes. One fell down, the next one fell, then the next one. Mm-hmm. And Germany thought they could win it very quickly. Unfortunately, what happened is when England came in, that slowed down their timetable. And ultimately, timidity on the part of von Moltke, their commander, who watered down the Schlieffen Plan and changed it, led the Schlieffen Plan to fail, which led to a stalemate on the Western Front. And by that time, the Russians got into it, so Germany found itself in a two-front war. And nobody in 1914 had the wherewithal, the ability to win a decisive campaign at that point. And by the way, if I just add one more thing.
Sure.
World War I is unique in that it basically was the culmination of all the war fighting techniques and strategies and the methods of waging war that have been devised from the 18th century until that day. Basically, all the campaigns of Frederick the Great, of Napoleon, the Victorian Age, all these wars, that, including the American Civil War, by the way, had led warfare to evolve in a certain direction. Mm-hmm. And that direction culminated in World War One and the tactics used in World War One. But unfortunately, technology has surpassed tactics. So the tactics that were being used, which worked pretty well under Napoleon and worked pretty well during the American Civil War, didn't work against machine guns like the Maxim machine gun, the plethora of heavy artillery that was deployed across the front, massive guns, barbed wire, poison gas, trench warfare, all these things made the tactics of the day ineffective and just created bloodbaths. And what that triggered was what mankind is very good at doing, which is coming up with better ways of killing ourselves. So we had to find a better way, and so we came up with what eventually became modern-day warfare, which is based on mobility and tanks and aircraft and the tank was invented, submarine warfare was invented, aircraft were invented and used for war for the first time during World War One. it triggered the development of a new stage of military thinking, which is modern-day warfare.
Interesting. Yes, I remember when we did our series, so nostalgic to listen to your explanation, because I remember so much of this. The chemical gas, of course, was also used in World War One. Was that for the first time that chemical weapons were used, Barry?
It was, and it was used for the first time, I believe, in 1915, beginning of the second year of the war. And started with mustard gas and then chlorine gas and other kinds of gases were used, mostly mustard or chlorine. Phosgene was another one. And interesting enough, World War I was the last time that a major war saw the use of gas, because it was so ghastly, no pun intended, that all the powers said after that, we're not going to do this again. And that's what led to the conventions that to this day hold that, there's a red line that is crossed when you use poison gas.
That's right. That's very interesting. Barry, let me take a little break. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the United States getting into the war. And then we'll kind of tie that into President Trump in Paris. We're going to take a little break. We're going to hear from my friend Carlos Givens. And then we'll be back with Barry right after this.
This is Carlos Guedes Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Sisiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sisiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos on the show information right under the show description, where you see that Barry's our guest tonight. And then just check on that, and it'll tell you where Carlos is playing all around town. I also want you to click on Carlos, on Duke Machado, who's another friend of our show in Central Texas. He's a car dealer. So if you're looking for a car, give him a call. He may be able to help you out. I know one thing, he's going to treat you well. Duke is a very, very good guy. Let's get back to Barry Jacobson, our wonderful friend of our show, as well as military historian. Barry, I thought maybe we could take a few minutes and talk about how the United States got in, because as I recall from my history lesson, when Mr. Wilson ran for president, I believe in 1912, and then initially he did not want to get involved, but one way or another he got involved, Barry. So maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, Woodrow Wilson actually had, he beat Taft in 1912. He was a academic. He was not a politician, though he'd spent some time in government. And he was a very progressive president, Democrat. And when the war broke out in 1914, there was a large anti-war sentiment in America. There was no reason we need to be involved in this. Well, really, it was a family squabble. One of the things we didn't mention earlier was that that's kind of an irony of World War One, is that most of the royal families of Europe were all cousins. They're all related. They were all on very friendly basis with each other. None of them wanted to destroy each other. They all thought it would be a short, somewhat glorious war for their side. And, of course, it proved to be the downfall of most of the great monarchies. The Tsar ended up dead. The Austrian-Hungarian Empire collapsed. The Kaiser had to abdicate at the end of the war. So, most of the monarchs of Europe disappeared after the war, or at least many of them did. So it was a disaster from that standpoint, too. But so America had no skin in the game. We had no dog in the fight. But some incidents happened during the first few years of the war that changed American sentiment, beginning with the German treatment of civilians in 1914 as they advanced through Belgium. Now, much of this was propaganda. It's what's called black legend, where you basically use yellow journalism and lies to tarnish somebody's reputation, a nation's reputation. But a myth gets created of something that does that. And the myth in 1914, based somewhat on reality, but mostly it was just blown out of proportion by the propagandist, was that the Germans were no better than the Huns, which, by the way, is why the Germans became called the Huns. Patton always called them, the Hun. And if you remember your history, the Huns were barbarian nomadic warriors out of Central Asia during the late days of the Roman Empire. who are known for their atrocities, their inhuman atrocities. And so the as the Germans advanced to Belgium, they got a lot of bad press for what they did to Belgian towns and civilians. So that was the first thing that began to sour America towards the Germans. A next big incident was probably the sinking of the Lusitania in 1915, which was a passenger liner. It wasn't American. It was a British ship, and it was sunk, torpedoed by a German U-boat. And there were American citizens on board, and they were killed, and that, again, angered America. And there was also economic reasons. The American banks had been making huge loans to Britain and France, and were eager that Britain and France be able to repay those, and they wouldn't do that if they lost the war. So that was another factor. But finally, what finally happened was, even though Wilson ran on a campaign in 1916, which made the bold claim that he kept us out of war. That was his boast. You know, he kept us out of war. He hadn't been inaugurated for 3 months when he got us into the war. Mm-hmm. And what turned the United States into the war was probably the Zimmerman telegram. Do you remember that?
Yes, I recall that from our show. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was a telegram sent by a German minister to Mexico, telling the Mexicans if they were to attack the United States, Germany would support them. This particular minister wanted to get America distracted by fighting Mexico and then keep them out of the war. And Mexico had no interest in doing that. They're in the middle of a civil war at the time.
That's right.
Of Pancho Villa and Zapata and so on. So we'd had some border incidents. In fact, Patton won his spurs, so to speak, or in mafia parlance, he made his bones as a young officer chasing Pancho Villa down into Mexico when Pancho Villa waded across the American border.
Yeah,
you know, so there was never bad blood between the two of us.
Right,
there's always a balance between Mexico and the United States.
Sure, I had to. You know, if only Zimmerman, if it had only occurred to him to do a caravan, maybe that would have been a better deal.
Right.
But I guess he just.
I don't think we were quite as welcoming back in those days.
That would have been pretty good. But one thing you mentioned, General Patton, and again, one of those coincidences of history, he was born on this day in 1885. So 1885,
right.
November 11th, he was born, on this day. So that's another one of those coincidences of history. But it was a very brutal war, as I remember. Go ahead.
I would say, and Patton probably did not celebrate that particular day, you know, in 1918 on his birthday when the war ended, because Patton loved nothing more than war. You know, he was born for war. If there's ever been a man who was made to be a warrior, it was Patton. And he was heart sick when World War II ended, and I'm sure he probably felt much the same way when World War I ended on his birthday.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. He was 33 on this day in 1918 when the war ended. What ranking did he? I don't remember now. What ranking had he achieved in World War I? Do you remember?
Just off the top of my head, I think it was lieutenant colonel. I'd have to go back and look.
Okay,
I think it was lieutenant colonel. He commanded the first armored brigade that we ever fielded, the only one we ever fielded in World War I. In those days, tanks were these big iron monstrosities with bristling with machine guns and cannon, much bigger than later tanks would be in some cases, and of course much slower. And interestingly enough, he tells in memoirs how he had to sit in the hatch to see. He couldn't be inside the tanks, couldn't see anything. So he'd get up there in the hatch and he'd kick the driver in the back of the head to get his attention. And then kick him to the left shoulder to go left, and kick him to the right shoulder to go right. there's no radio on board. You couldn't hear each other.
That's right. And another interesting bit about World War One is that future President Truman also fought in World War One. I think he was the only president. Obviously, Roosevelt didn't fight in World War One. Maybe Eisenhower did. I don't remember. But definitely future President Truman. Really?
MacArthur.
Okay.
MacArthur was an officer.
Okay.
In fact, I think he obtained the rank of general in World War One.
Interesting.
MacArthur at the beginning of World War II, MacArthur was actually not only the senior general in the American Army, but he had actually retired from the American Army. Not that a general can't be recalled at any time, and he was, in fact, recalled when World War II broke out. But he was the most senior general, and then he had gone to the Philippines after he retired to organize the Filipino Army, as Philippines was getting ready for an independence, you know, for its independence, and then World War II broke out. And so he was recalled to expand our forces in the Pacific.
Interesting, you know, interesting connections, of course. President Truman fought in World War One. President Eisenhower, as you mentioned, General MacArthur, Adolf Hitler fought in World War One. That had a big impact in his mind and what he eventually became, Barry.
May I mention that? May I speak of that?
Yeah.
So that is, there's a lot of misinformation out there about Hitler's role in World War One. There's even a story that he was in the sights of a British sniper early in the war and could have been killed in World War One, and that would, of course, saved the world a lot of headaches. I'm not sure if that's true. There's no way of proving that story. There is some evidence, but it's, you know, pretty slender. But that aside, Hitler had a very good record in World War One. He was a messenger. He joined a Bavarian regiment, went to war in an infantry regiment, but he was second into the staff as a runner. And this was a very dangerous job because while most of the troops were huddling down their trenches, fairly safe until they came out of the trenches to go over the top, as they call it, when they charge forward into no man's land. But while they were down the trenches, they were, you know, below ground and fairly safe from machine gun fire and artillery shells, unless you were unfortunate enough to have the shell land right in their trench. But Hitler, and like all the runners, had to run around from one trench to the next and then back to headquarters carrying messages. And so he was exposed to fire, and the life expectancy of a runner was pretty small. Hitler defied the odds and again braved fire and carried his messages forward. Eventually, at the end of the war, he was wounded by mustard gas and ended up the war in a hospital. After the war, he always wore in politics his trench coat, his military trench coat, a big gray coat, was his way. And he always made a big thing about it. He was a frontline soldier. He was a real soldier. Not like the generals. He had real contempt for his own generals throughout the war, which was to Germany's detriment. But the generals were actually pretty good. Germany started the war with some excellent commanders, but Hitler didn't respect them. And the reason he didn't respect them is because in World War One, as a runner carrying messages from those generals to the front, he got to know them. Not the same fellows, but he got to know generals. And the generals of that day, of 1914 through 1918, acquired the name of Chateau Generals, the contemptuous nickname, because while troops were in muddy trenches filled with dead bodies and rats and eating scanty rations and just living a miserable existence, the officer corps, particularly the generals and their staff, were far, far to the rear, living in French chateaus and, you know, mansions, and living a very good life, drinking wine and eating on china, fine china. And Hitler saw that. And so he developed a contempt for generals who he didn't consider to be real soldiers. They never risked their life like he did, like, you know, the soldiers in the front. So when he formed his Nazi party, even though he had the services of a couple of high-ranking officers like Ludendorff, who became an early Nazi, for most of the generals, especially the Prussian officer corps, the Prussian aristocrats, he had nothing but contempt. And it's a good thing, because if he had listened to his generals, they might have won the war.
That's exactly right. I remember when we did our series in World War II, that's one of the points that you made many, many times about Hitler not listening to his generals. And had he listened to them, things may have been a little bit different. One quick point here at the end, Barry. I just wanted to talk about President Trump in Paris. There was a celebration, I guess, there for the end of World War One. At first, it seemed like there was going to be a little dispute with President Macron of France, but it didn't really turn out that way, I guess, as I read it. But I find the interesting thing to me when I saw the picture of President Trump and some of the other world leaders is that he's actually, politically speaking, back home the strongest of all of these leaders. I mean, President Macron is having serious problems at home. Angela Merkel, very serious problems. And, you know, Theresa May in Great Britain. So in Great Britain, she's in trouble. So it just seems like President Trump, at least at the moment, is in the strongest position in his own country, Barry.
Yeah, I mean, arguably, with the exception of some of the Eastern European ones, such
yes.
as the Hungarian and Austrian leaders who are in strong position. I'm not sure about the Polish leader. And, of course, Putin, who is, you know, a dictator. Of the Democrat, the Western democracies, you're right. Trump is in a very strong position. And what's interesting is that Merkel is done. I mean, she's basically mm-hmm. said she's not running for re-election. She'll step down beginning mm-hmm. next year. She has been undone by her immigrant policy, which has fractured mm-hmm. her own party, and they've had one disastrous election after another as the German people react to her policies and with scorn and dislike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Trump has his own problems, of course. Now, the thing with Macron is that, which is interesting, Macron made a speech at the Arc de Triomphe against nationalism, and this was a very obvious attack on Trump or a barb pointed at Trump or
mm-hmm.
towards Trump, who had recently called himself a nationalist. There's always the press likes to twist and the left likes to twist these definitions. You know, nationalism doesn't mean national socialism or,
mm-hmm.
or it doesn't mean white nationalism. White nationalism is a different entity. It's another term for white supremacist, but nationalism per se has nothing to do with race.
Mm-hmm.
So Trump meant it not in a racial sense, but in a traditional sense of nationalism, which is
mm-hmm.
that you love your country and you put its interests first. So Macron was obviously speaking to Trump. And, of course, he followed that up with a call for a European army, which
mm-hmm.
would make Europe safe against threats from Russia, China, and the United States. Not that China's
mm-hmm.
going to invade Europe, not that we're going to invade Europe, but it's Europe can't even support NATO, much less its own military.
Right, yeah. Exactly. That's the whole point. And I thought it was interesting, too. President Macron gave a speech about nationalism, but then he ended the speech saying, Vive la France, which I thought was, it's kind of interesting.
The venue. The venue is the Arc de Triomphe, which is a monument to nationalism. It's covered
right.
with the battle names and the battle honors of the Napoleonic era, the great battles won
right.
by France. So, you can ask for a bigger symbol of nationalism.
Exactly. And I think, Barry, it was what you have to understand, and I keep telling people this because everybody's so hung up on getting along with other countries. And, we like to get along with countries, of course. But what people need to understand is that many of these countries have their own internal problems. And right now, in many of these countries, Trump is a good punching bag, you might say. Politically, we saw the same thing back in 2003 with the French and the Iraq War. I mean, the French didn't support the Iraq War primarily for internal reasons. Had nothing to do with the issues of the Iraq War. It was all internal. And so, I mean, you always have to take these foreign leaders and understand that they've got their own problems, too. And sometimes, in this case, at least, criticizing President Trump is at least politically speaking, good for them back home. What I want to do, Barry, is set up another time, and we'll do another one of our current issues programs. Hopefully, sometime this month or in the next few weeks, we can do that, because there's a lot of things to talk about. Tonight, I wanted to just focus a little bit on Veterans Day and the end of World War One, because of what that means today, November 11th. Is there anything else that you wanted to say about Veterans Day or World War One that you didn't get to?
No, but I do want to salute my fellow veterans.
Yes.
I tell people, people often say, thank you for your service. And I think now there's a movement to say, let's not forget, or something along those lines. And
mm-hmm.
all that's fine. But military service for some of us wasn't just a job. And,
mm-hmm.
and frankly, it wasn't a matter of sacrifice either. We go into the military. I did. My son did. He's currently serving.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a calling,
mm-hmm.
like being a priest. and you can thank your priest for his service, you know, to you, your spiritual needs. And it's akin to that.
Mm-hmm.
We become warriors because it's something in our blood. I didn't join the military. I didn't join special forces, ultimately, because I wanted to serve the United States. I love my country, and I'm glad to have served the United States and where it sent me. But that's not why I serve. I serve because it was a calling. It was in my blood.
Mm-hmm.
I was born to be a warrior. And,
right.
And I think and sometimes I'm just a little embarrassed when people say thank you for your service. I don't think like it was anything onerous or difficult.
Right.
For me, it was some of the best times in my life. I'm glad I did it. And if you want to thank me for it, fine. But I did it because it called me. It was something.
That's right. Well, your father and grandfather had also been in service in the military as well, right, Bear?
Yeah, I mean, both my grandfathers fought in World War One.
Mm-hmm.
My father and all my six uncles fought in World War Two or Korea. Both my brothers fought in Vietnam. I fought throughout the Cold War. My son just came back from Iraq, so we have what's that, one, two, three, the fourth generation of my family since 1918 have fought. Served in the military.
Yeah, I remember that from some of our previous. It's like you said, it's a calling. I mean, it's a calling. You have many, you know, you have, I know families where there's generations of police officers, and it's in the blood. I have a really good friend from high school who his family, his father, his grandfather, his uncle, his brother had all been firemen, and that's what he wanted to do. So I think you're right. I think there is a calling. And also, let's remember, this is a volunteer army. So the people who are going to fight or join the army, like our son, well, you know, he did it because he wanted to. Now, I mean, there was no telegram that came to your home, as used to be at one time, and said you've been drafted. That's not the case anymore. Every one of these young men and women who are wearing the uniform now is a volunteer in every sense. So I think if I may just say this about that, I think that's why people say thank you for your service. It's not so much. I think it's because it's so many of them are volunteers, and I think maybe that's where it comes from, Barry.
Yeah, and I always take it graciously, and I'm always.
Sure.
I enjoy people thanking me, and it tells me that they still love their country, and this is their way of expressing it, and I'm fine with that. By the way, if you want to do something nice for veterans, I can recommend to everybody that they buy my favorite coffee. My favorite coffee is from a company called Black Rifle, and it's owned by veterans. They donate to veteran causes. So if you want to do something nice for veterans, that's one thing you can do is buy Black Rifle coffee.
Is that online? Is that how you get it?
Yeah, I go online to Black Rifle, and I order it, and they bring it to my house every couple weeks.
Well,
even,
I'm glad you told me that.
Even serve it by work.
I'm glad you told me that. I don't remember that.
And it's really good coffee on top of everything else, and they have quite a wide variety.
Well, I mean, look, I'm glad you told me that. I was not aware of that. So it's called Black Rifle Coffee? Is that what it's called?
That's it, Black Rifle. And they got some very amusing videos on YouTube. And check out their YouTube videos; they're funny as heck.
Well, we're gonna have to get coffee that way because I just think that's a. I mean, I had no idea that existed, but I think that's a wonderful idea. Well, Barry, thank you very much for joining us tonight. And again, maybe let's think of something on the current events from the current events area that we can talk about in the next couple of weeks. I know there's things going on. So if you have any idea, let's try to do a show in the next couple of weeks, maybe a couple of shows before the end of the year, about current events. So just pick the topic and whatever you want to do, and we'll develop it, Barry.
Well, Sylvia, I'm always honored to be on your show, and I'd be delighted to do that. The only thing I've heard from you more recently is I bought my own business in the last year, and I've been busier than the one-legged man in a jump rope contest. So,
well,
but
I understand how that works.
I'd love to be on the show.
I know how that works because we're all pretty busy. I'm pretty busy myself with a lot of things going on. But you tell me when, and we'll do it.
Looking forward to it, Silvio. Happy Veterans Day.
Thank you. The same to you. Happy Veterans Day to you. And I hope maybe the Rams go to the Super Bowl. That'd be kind of cool.
you know, this could be their year. Of course, you know, they were in 1999. They won the Super Bowl, and that was the greatest show on turf. You know, Dick Vermeil. So
that was in St. Louis, right? When they did that.
That's right. Maybe lightning will strike again.
Well, I hope so. I mean, the Dodgers had back-to-back World Series. They couldn't do it. Maybe the Rams will do it.
That's right. LA is now hungry for a victory, so we'll see. Take care, Silvio. Have a great night.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Barry Jacobs, and I always enjoy chatting with him about military history and issues like that. It's just a lot of fun. He's so knowledgeable on top of it, and there's always something to learn when we visit with Barry. Well, happy Veterans Day to each and every one of you who's a veteran. I have lots of friends here locally who are, as I mentioned, in the church. We had a big ceremony today for the veterans, and it's a great feeling to recognize these men and women who have done so much. Some have done big things, others have just served, but that's okay. We remember all of them on this their day. Happy Veterans Day. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.